you are going to make some progress into quantum gravity. Of course, string theory had already some progress on that due to Strominger and Vafa. But the story today is mostly about a recent development starting in 2015 with Benigni, Christophe, and Saffroni. So they check that in the context of ADS4 CFT3, if you compute the Larshan limit of the topologically twisted index of ABGM theory, I will give you a very brief definition coming up, that it correctly reproduces the black hole entropy of some magnetically charged asymptotically ADS4 black holes. So that's quite a remarkable result. And it has more recently been extended to dionic black holes in massive 2A, black holes that come from wrapping M5 brains on different manifolds, and even for rotating black holes in various dimensions, ADS5, ADS6. So this is now a very robust, very important result. And so what I want to tell you about is something I've been doing, again, with the people that I mentioned at the beginning, which is to try to look at this formula beyond the leading order. So you should think of the entropy as an observable whose main contribution comes from this very universal formula. But we know this is just, let's say, like the Bohr energy. This is like the first term. There are corrections. And one particular class of corrections are logarithmic in the area. So those are the ones that I'm going to discuss. And this is essentially what I want to tell you a little bit about. So here's the outline. So first I will describe what the topologically twisted index of ABGM is. Then I will turn to the black magnetically charged asymptotically ADS4 black hole, give you a very brief description of how you compute these logarithmic corrections, and see how, of course, I'm here because the story is positive, so it matches what it needs to match. And then I go to a slightly more general situations where black holes are obtained by wrapping M5 brains on hyperbolic 3 manifolds. And so here you have to treat magnetically and electrically charged separately, and I will do that. And then towards the end, I will make, if I have time, some comments about the ADS5 story. And again, some logarithmic corrections that one can compute out there. So that's my plan. So here's my one slide about ABGM theory. So it's a three-dimensional Chern-Simons matter theory with this gauge group, UN cross UN, and the levels of Chern-Simons are K and minus K. So the matter sector is seen by fundamental representations, and generically for K different from 1 and 2, this is an N equals 6 superconformal theory. Of course, we are going to be interested in K equal 1, in which case this is enhanced to N equal 8, and the understanding in the gravity on dual of the theory is much easier to it's easier to understand. All right, so here's a quiver describing the theory with its global symmetries. I guess that this is fairly self-explanatory. So the topologically twisted index was computed or introduced by Benigni and Saffroni at the beginning of 2015, also at the same time by Honda and Closet et al. And essentially, it's a supersymmetric partition function on S1 cross S2, where you have some magnetic flux on X2. So you can think of it in some Hamiltonian approximation as essentially the Witter index with an index with these sort of weights. Na is the flux, delta I are the fugacities or chemical potentials of the corresponding charges. So in this case, we'll have some flavor charges. All right, so you can compute it also using supersymmetric localization, which is the path that we're going to follow. And you can generalize it to an arbitrary Riemann surface of genus G. So this is basically something you get for free. So a little bit more on that. So the background here, you can see S2. This is S1. This is the background field that you introduce. The form of the answer that I'm going to be using is roughly along this like this. So you have some integration over a contour, and then you have to sum over some magnetic fluxes. They live in this lattice gamma H. Doesn't matter much if you have not seen this. Of course, there are many experts in the audience, so it's hard for me to go into a lot of details. But roughly, any localization computation is reading of this form with some classical part and a one-loop part. And in this case, the classical part comes only from the Chern-Simons piece, and the one example of a one-loop contribution comes from the gauge group. There, of course, matter contribution. But roughly, you assemble your answer in this fashion. All right. This is, again, this is not the goal of my talk. I'm just reminding you in a kind of self-contained way what we're computing. So here's the answer. All right. So here's the answer. This is from Benigni, Christophe, and Saffaroni's paper. So this is not written exactly in the language of the standard language of localization. So this is written as the sum of solutions of some Bethe ansatz equation. The Bethe ansatz equations are written here. So this quantity is equal one, give you some equation. All right, give you essentially a 2n by 2n system of equation. And the matrix B represents the Jacobian of going from this variable as xi, xj. This corresponds, of course, to the holonomies under the two gauge groups. And these new variables for the Bethe ansatz. So of course, again, I just wanted to give you a description. Let me summarize. Yes.
The white cell, the fugacity is for the asymmetry.
For the flavor symmetry. Yes. 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 So you went to the fourth, the Cartan of SOA. All right, so again, this, if you have not seen it, it might be a little mouthful, but let's summarize what I...
Most general index, right?
Sorry?
It's the most general, there's no specialization of fugacities.
No, this is completely general. So, there's a condition among the all fugacities, the sum of all of them, but that's all right. So let me summarize what I just said. So I said that there's a system that comes from the Bethe ansatz equations. So I have written here. It's a small print because it doesn't matter necessarily what it is. What matters is that it's just a system of equations, some algebraic equations that on the fugacities. And so what you need to do algorithmically is just solve this equation for the fugacities and plug them in the formula that I show you. And that will give you the index, and that's it. And that is a problem that an undergrad can help you do it because it's very well defined. Here are my equations, plug them in this expression, and here's your topologically twisted index. All right. Now, one important thing for me is that this approach to the index is exact in n, right? So now, if I want to understand dependence on n absolute leading order, I can because this is exact in n. It's not an approximation. So let me tell you exactly what I mean. What I mean is that when I solve these equations, so you realize that these fugacities, they scale with n like this. Ti is just some label that and they are distributed fairly symmetrically along this line. So this is already enough for you to evaluate the index. But because we know a little bit of matrix model, we know that this is not the most efficient way to treat this kind of problem. That the best way to treat this problem is to introduce some eigenvalue density. So here two, because they are complex and there's a symmetry. So you have the real part, and this is for the imaginary part, and this is enough to evaluate the index at leading order. This is what Benigni, Christophe, and Saffaroni did. And this expression is quite remarkable because it matches after a Fourier transform, it matches the entropy of the corresponding black hole. So that's the big success. But I have been telling you this story too because I am interested in going to sub-leading order, right? To go into what I was mentioning at the beginning. So let's say that this part was already checked. Now there are some sub-leading. You can check that there's an n to the 1/2, and then my goal is to get to this object, to the log of n. So for that, because I have a finite an expression that is exact in n, I can essentially try to plot how the partition functions depends on n and fit this number. So of course I have to change the fugacities, I have to change a number of things, but what you can see more or less with the naked eye is that this number is very close to minus 1/2. And it's sort of independent of the fluxes that you choose, it's independent of many things. So, and again, I can go into some discussion of numerics, but I think that in this audience is not that important. The important thing is that now we have, so this part we don't understand completely, and I will talk about that at the end, but this minus 1/2 is very robust. So now, summarizing, the n to the 3/2 term was understood by Benigni, Christoph, and Sofroni, and that term exactly reproduces the leading part of the Begentin-Hogan entropy, the one that goes to area divided by 4, all right? So, because these black holes, okay, so these are, we can go to the gravity side, but essentially the goal is to now go to the gravity side and reproduce this term. So that's the goal of the next few minutes. All right, so actually let me add a small correction. So the difference between this partition function on S2 or on sigma G is known. There's some rescaling formula that you can get. So I can be more ambitious and try to match on the gravity side this term that is for any genus Riemann surface, not necessarily G equals 0, which is what the computation that I did. So this is slightly more ambitious goal. All right, so now let's go to the gravity side. Let's get that number from the gravity side. So I remind you that ABJM describes a stack of n M2 brains that are probing this C4 ZK singularity. And the description that we're looking for is essentially in 11-dimensional supergravity. So the index that we computed in the ABJM side corresponds to topological twists. So on the gravity side, what that means is essentially that I'm looking for magnetically charged configurations, and they will happen to be black holes. All right, so in fact, this can be understood I could write the full metric in 11 dimensions, but I think this is more intuitive. So this is a 4-dimensional asymptotically ADS black hole. So you see for large R, this would be just ADS, and there's a horizon, all right? And the important thing is that now this is the flux, and I have identified my magnetic charge, all right? So this is the supergravity configuration dual to what would be the topologically twisted index or topologically twisted configuration in ABJM.
So is G the same as the genus?
This G is not the genus, I'm sorry. This G is essentially 1/(radius) of ADS.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. Any other question? All right, so let me, this is actually to convince you that this is not, okay. This computation is a lot more complicated than similar computations for asymptotically flat black holes. Because there, if you know a little bit about that, a lot was understood just by scaling of charges. So here, there is really no scaling of charges. So here's the entropy. I just wanted to write it once so that you see that the function that we are matching is highly non-trivial, and it's not something that you can guess by scaling of charges or anything like that. So this is, in the metric that I wrote before, this is the radius of the horizon. Okay, this is the Keller potential because I wrote this in the language of n=2 gauge supergravity, but this is the expression where F2 is given by this combination of the magnetic charge and theta is given by this one. And then there's a square root. So it's a highly non-trivial formula, and this formula can be obtained by the Legendre transform of the topologically twisted index, okay? So there's one little detail, and I don't want to dwell a lot on it, but you need to extremize with respect to the fugacities to get really this expression, but that's it. So again, now my goal is to compute one-loop corrections of this supergravity theory. So let me tell you, why the logarithmic terms are particularly special, right? Because, so why not matching the n to the 1/2? So the logarithmic terms are particularly good for what following. So this, they provide an infrared window into UV physics. This is the title of a review by Sen, who essentially carried this program for asymptotically flat black holes. And let's understand why. So logarithmic corrections are determined macroscopically in the gravity side from essentially only the massless spectrum, and they are fairly insensitive to any UV completion of the theory. So it's something that you compute knowing your massless degrees of freedom, and it carries information for the full theory. So because of that, they become a natural consistency check for any quantum enumeration of black hole microstates. So in this case, ABJM or some field theory answer for the entropy of black hole is there, so I can use the gravity computation to check if the answer is compatible with this. And this is essentially like a litmus test. It's like if you say no, then you're out. So you have to, whatever whatever microscopic description you have, you can always test it, if it is correct or not, by just matching against it. So this, as I mentioned before, has been developed for asymptotically flat black holes, or black holes in string theory, by Ashok Sen and many collaborators, and have provided very clean precision tests of the Strominger-Vafa computation. So it has also been used recently by Strominger to understand or to justify a microscopic realization of the Kerr-CFT correspondence. And in the context of ABJM, in fact, the subpartition function of ABJM on a three-sphere is known in some limit, and that leads to a minus a quarter log of n. So this minus a quarter log of n was obtained or on the gravity side by Bhattacharya, Grassi, Marinjonsen. So this is the simplest test that you can come up with to see if your field theory answer really is answering the question about entropy that you think it is, all right? So this is essentially why the logarithmic term is so explicit. So let me walk you through a few computations to exemplify why this is the case. All right, so we want to compute this logarithmic term. This is a one-loop effect from one-loop effective function. So one-loop effective function is essentially equivalent to computing determinants, right? It's sort of like the free fluctuations. So for a given kinetic operator A, one usually defines the determinant as essentially a regularized the sum of log of the eigenvalues. Prime denotes that I do not want to include a vanishing eigenvalue. So a simpler way to do this is to define the Higgs kernel, which I define formally like this, all right? And from the Higgs kernel, I can compute the determinant using essentially this Wigner trick, all right? But now the problem with the Higgs kernel is that the Higgs kernel contains both zero modes and non-zero modes, and my formula with prime eliminated zero modes. So I need to subtract the zero modes that were contained here, and that is sort of my formula for the determinant. That would be my one-loop effective function. Now, this is a fact from geometry that the Higgs kernel admits an expansion for small tau of this form, and these are the Seeley-DeWitt coefficient. Okay, bear with me for a moment because the punchline would be very clean, but we need to walk through this quickly. So again, I'm interested, one-loop effective function, I'm interested in determinants. There's a subtlety that the Higgs kernel, which is what I want to use, contains zero modes, so I have to subtract them, and moreover, it admits this expansion. So when I plug in my expression for the log determinant, I'll have now, this is the sum over all terms. But you see, I'm interested in the logarithmic term, so there's only one term that can contribute. This has to be zero, this n minus d over two, so only when n is d over two, this Seeley-DeWitt coefficient is the only one that can contribute to the log. And then, of course, this was because I had it there. All right? So the punchline of this is that that only one term contributes in the Seeley-DeWitt expansion to the logarithmic term. And moreover, if I am in an odd-dimensional space, this term is zero. So there's no curvature invariant combination that I can construct in an odd-dimensional space. So because of that, so now we can summarize the story of the computation in this case. So first of all, okay, this one I went maybe a little bit too fast. So this epsilon, this very, very early time, is of course very high energy. So this is, in this formulation, this is what the UV cutoff means. But because I'm looking at the log, it is independent of exactly how I choose this UV cutoff. So that this property. So the log term is independent of the precise UV cutoff that I use. In odd dimensional spaces, that the coefficient that will contribute is zero. There's nothing I can construct that has the right weight and is diff invariant. So that is zero. So that means that if I am looking to compute the logarithmic term in an odd dimensional theory, all I'm left with is essentially the contribution of zero modes. And then, of course, there's this part of the effective function that will have bosons and fermions. And that's it. All right, so let me say that in full detail. So now we are interested in this log of the partition function. So all we need to do is to focus on the zero modes. Now the zero modes, this is what I need to do. I subtract them from the Higgs kernel because the Higgs kernel was sort of messing up. But now I have to add them appropriately. How they should be added with the condition that their measure is well defined like this. All All right, so this is what this beta means, and I will show you what the betas that we're going to use. And then there's a contribution for ghosts, because I'm trying to quantize, I'm looking at quantum gravity in this background. So that is my answer. So I need to find the zero modes and then know how they enter in my path integral, and that would be my answer. So I don't have to compute any curvature invariant, none of that, because I'm going to work in 11 dimension, right? The dual of ABJM is an 11 dimensional theory. So then immediately I got rid of this silly the weak coefficient that could contribute, and now all my problem is a problem about zero modes. Now, for black holes, there are different ways to treat this, but for black holes, you can think of then, if I go to the non-streamal branch, and this is an important part of the computation, essentially all the topology comes from the structure of the sigma g, because t and r directions are contractible. So essentially, I can conclude that this is the Euler characteristic for non-streamal black holes. This is what I'm going to use. And this is related to the number of two-form zero modes. So this is essentially... Now, the question, why do I care about some two-form zero modes in 11-dimensional gravity? Is because in 11-dimensional supergravity, I have metric and a three-form field. Those are my fields. But when I want to do a one-loop computation there, I need to gauge fix, and there's gauge redundancy with the three-form field. And so this was answered by essentially Siegel and all the papers in the 80s. If you want to quantize a p-form, you will require a set of p minus j plus one form ghost fields, because again, it's very intuitive. So there is a gauge redundancy in AP, d of lambda p minus one, but that itself has a redundancy, d of lambda p minus two. And I have to continue until the end. So at the end of the day, this is what I need to do. I need to find all this, and they will change, Grassmann odd and Grassmann even as I go down this chain. But the answer is that the ghost part that I need for quantizing this p-form field is going to contribute to the effective function like this. So again, summarizing with a little bit more details. So to quantize this three-form, I need to introduce a two-form ghosts that are Grassmann odd, three one-form ghosts that are Grassmann even, and four scalar ghosts that are Grassmann odd, all right? So note that this C mu nu rho, the three-form field in supergravity, cannot give me a zero mode because I'm thinking about a theory on S7. S7 has no non-trivial one cycle. First Betti number is zero. So the only two-form that can contribute to my computation is the one, the ghost that I need for quantizing the three-form. That's why I was going about this two-form for a while. So I need to compute this part. So for the ghost, this is the ghost two-form action. The contribution is going to be like this. Now let me tell you what this beta two is. Beta two is essentially, I want to normalize my path integral for these fields. And I'm going to assume that the metric has some, because I'm interested in the log of L. So I'm going to assume that there's a rescaling, that I rescale the metric in a way that becomes L independent. And then from here to have a measure that is normalized, I get the beta two, right? So this beta, this has to be 7/2. And that's essentially my answer. So I now have the number of two-form zero modes. I have the beta two, and this is my formula. And this is the answer. When I translate that into how it affects the gravity, entropy, I get something that perfectly agrees with the computation in field theory. All right, so that's essentially this first part. And again, because I did it in an arbitrary Riemann surface, I have this expression. So one important thing is that, and maybe again, there were a number of technical steps, but it was crucial that I approach the stream of black hole through the non-streamer branch. Right, so that was one important observation, and that allows you to hope that maybe these streamal supersymmetric computations somehow are not completely disconnected from the more non-extremal ones. So for a student in particular, if you look at the streamal black hole, the streamal black hole has an infinite throat, right? So the topology is different from the topology that I use here, which is the non-extremal, in which the RT part is contractible. But this very same assumption was done also in the asymptotically flat black holes, because you're talking about the near horizon. So this is something that has been known for a while, and again, that makes you think that this computation is not completely disconnected from the non-extremal, actually slightly more dynamical story. All right, so this is for this was for ABJM, and there are a number of things that you might not enjoy, like all this numerical part, maybe this minus one half was not very solid. So what I tell you now is how to extend this computation in places where you have much more control over the field theory side. And this is when I consider the supergravity theory that comes from wrapping an M5 brain, wrapping M5 brain essentially. So the story that I told you, this is ADS-CFT sort of table for four dimensions, but we were living in this line, in this essentially this column. So we look at it, something that comes from N M2 brains probing some cone, right? In that case, cone over S7 was R8, right? And then we only know some special cases of this Y7. It has to be Sasaki-Einstein. But ADS-CFT is all the story that I mentioned was this column. So now I want to tell you a little bit about this column. In this column, I have N M5 brain. And then to get a four-dimensional gravity theory, they need to wrap a three-dimensional manifold. This happened to be a hyperbolic manifold. And then there's, again, there's a systematic algorithm that allows me to translate the data of M into supergravity data that I will use. The gravity dual, and I will write it for you, is essentially, again, an 11-dimensional theory, but now it contains this warp product of ADS4, M3, which is this hyperbolic space, and some squash S4, right? That's the space dual to this in this column. So you can compute L, but another important ingredient, and this is in red, because this, you see, I computed something in L. Yeah, maybe that, I went fast over there. So I computed something in L, but then I had to translate to N to make contact with the field theory. So the relationship in the M2 brain story was this. L is N to the 1/6. For the M5 story, L is proportional to N to the 1/3. That's an important difference. All right. Good, so let's go. So the field theory side of these theories has been developed by many people, including Davide and Google from Friend. So this is essentially the so-called 3D correspondence. So the field theory can be interpreted, it's a three-dimensional field theory, but most of the observables can be obtained from just looking at Chern-Simon with SLNZ group. So the partition functions that we might be interested in can be written like this, where this is Hundert gluing and fibering operators. So this P represents the fiber. This is the genus, if you wish. And of course, you have to sum over vacua of D3D n equal to theory. All right, so here's a table summarizing some of the ingredients. So this beta vacua, they will correspond. Okay, this line might create some controversy, but I'm interested in the large N. So I'm just going to consider irreducible flat connections on this side, the Chern-Simon theory. The fibering operator is essentially the classical part of Chern-Simon, and the Hundert gluing is related to the one loop determinant, which is again this Reisinger torsion. This is a technical thing. So the answer, I'm not going to belay this point. The answer of the partition function essentially comes in the Larshan limit. So the important thing is that this is all analytical, right? So there are results in mathematics that allow me to write this answer as is. So I have the n cubed part here. This would be like the entropy divided by area divided by 4. But I also know the log of n part, and it comes with g minus 1. So again, this is a 1 over n expansion. It terminates at n equals 0, and then it has exponentially suppressed correction. It's analytic, so in this case, there were no numerics involved. And the logarithmic correction to log of z is essentially this term. G minus 1, this essentially multiplies everything. G minus 1 times log of n. So now, let's go to the gravity side to see that we reproduce this part as well. So this is the supergravity solution. This time I wrote it in 11 dimensions. So to clarify what we mean. So this is the black hole will be here, asymptotically ADS4 black hole. This is the metric of hyperbolic three-manifold H. To get M3, I need to, again, quotient by some subgroup of this PSL to Z. But locally, of course, I just write the metric of this Euclidean ADS tree. And then this is what I was mentioning about this tilde S4. So this is squash S4 is obtained by, so this YA coordinates, they satisfy a constraint. So they essentially give me something topologically like S2. And then these two other coordinates give me similarly something like S2. But again, this derivative contains is fiber over the spin connection of this part. So this is like, this is everything you needed from the gravity solution. So it's very well known, it's explicit. Of course, there are better ways to tackle this business, which thanks to Pernici Sesgin, Acharya Gowlin Kim, so a number of people have worked on how to work on how to reduce this 11-dimensional theory. And in that, in fact, there is a universal solution. Once you reduce it to 4 dimensions, you essentially have gravity, a graviton, and cosmological constant. And here's the solution. So this is, again, I changed a little bit coordinates here, but again, you see for large rho, this is ADS4 with this sort of horizon. There's a horizon at rho squared equals 1/2, but this is just rescaling. And then the flux is essentially given by this formula. So these are very well-known solutions. People knew them, I think this is from the 70s or early 80s, sorry. And you compute the area of the horizon, the leading piece in the entropy expansion, and this is what you get. This is precisely, it precisely matches this term. Okay. Volume n cubed divided by 3 pi g minus 1. So that's what you see here. All right. And again, the important thing is that you see this is a very large class. So for any 11-dimensional theory that reduce to a 4-dimensional theory, this is a consistent truncation. I have a perfect match. And what I need to use here, of course, was the scaling of L with N. It's different. And that gives me the precise match. So for the logarithmic term, I don't have to tell you the story again. There's only a two-form zero. There's some two-form zero modes, and that's essentially what I need to compute. I already showed you this computation. Now the key thing is that this L is now not going to scale as before. It's going to scale slightly differently, but I do get g minus 1 log of n. So this matches precisely with the field theory that came from the Chern-Simon part of the 3D correspondence of the theory. Okay. Now, in fact, from the gravity side, I can immediately go ahead and say, what happens if the first Betti number of this space was non-zero? Then I will have a three-form zero mode, because the three-form zero mode will come from a product of two-form, which is one-form. And then that will contribute to the action, and it contributes exactly like this. So again, I will not do it explicitly, but you have an idea that this comes from basically rescaling of the measure, of integration measure for the three-form. This is the number of three-form zero modes. It's sort of the number of two-form zero modes that I have times the number of one-form zero modes that are now available. And again, this is the full answer that I would expect for spaces that are a little bit more general. All right? That is sort of like a prediction. But that, of course, matches. So if I take B1 equals 0, this precisely matches the field theory result. All right?
Was B1 0 in the field theory?
In field theory, this computation was done for B1 0. And then, so the last part of this story is we want to do the superconformal index in which B1 is extended not to be 0. And then it also matches. All right, so the last 4-dimensional black hole that I want to talk about is this one. So you can now see that things have gotten a lot more complicated. So what is this? So this is, again, an asymptotically ADS4 black hole. But as you can see, it is rotating, right? Then it has electric charge, and there's some magnetic component, but this is mostly is because of the rotation, so it really is. It's just electric charge. So this black hole is, again, well understood, and we know the entropy of the black hole. Because I'm interested in the supersymmetric black hole, there is some relationship between the angular momentum and charge. They are not independent. So the formula for the entropy can be written like this, but again, because of this nonlinear relation, it is often written in this form. So again, it's not just a scaling argument. So it's really something deeper that is going on at the level of for the entropy of this black hole. Now, so normally we just compute the entropy by saying here's the area, here's the entropy. But an equivalent way to compute the area is going through the on-shell action, or the in some case sometimes it's called the entropy function, which here I declare is this LS calligraphic. So the entropy, so you think of the entropy function, which can be the on-shell action, as your grand canonical partition function. And then you need to do a Legendre transformation from this partition function to get the entropy. Now, this is, again, sort of a constrained system, but what I want to emphasize now, which you already saw a little bit for ABJM, is that the natural object in field theory is really an entropy function. It's really like the on-shell action for the gravity part. So this is, in this case, I'm working, this is still a slide about gravity. So this entropy I can obtain as the Legendre transform of this entropy function, and then the entropy function is given here. And here I have already indicated going from gravity language with length to field theory language, all right? And again, this function reproduces all the properties, like this nonlinear relation, everything is encoded in this function. So now, for the superconformal index in these TM theories, I will not go into details, but there is a prescription. You know the holomorphic blocks from Chern-Simon. You know how to assemble them to give you the superconformal index, and here's the expansion. So you see that this function is precisely this function. So the superconformal index of the field theory precisely provides the entropy function that leads to the entropy of this black hole. And this was a rotating black hole with electric charge, et cetera. So for GR people, once you have something that is rotating and you have some control over that, that's a big achievement, because rotation is something that is very generic. It exists in cosmological black holes. So this is now, I think, a really important development, that this kind of matching of entropy is really working even at the for rotating black hole, etc. So let me finish this slide with so this entropy function reproduces the entropy after a Legendre transformation. The logarithmic correction now, if I assume that this first Betti number is non-zero, can be computed like this, and it precisely agrees with what gravity said. So there's agreement even for more generic three-dimensional hyperbolic manifolds. All right, so this is everything I wanted to say about ADS4 black holes. Questions? All right. So now what I want to tell you is it's kind of an ongoing story, and so some part of it is done by other people, and I'm not talking about that here, but let's see. So so my goal now is to say a little bit about five-dimensional black holes, ADS5, asymptotically ADS5 black holes. I guess I'm missing a slide, an introductory slide here, so let me just say it. So recently, I mean the end of 2018, there have been a number of computations by three different groups that have provided a microscopic foundation for the entropy of asymptotically ADS5 black holes. So this is an old problem. So these ADS5 black holes are rotating, are supersymmetric. These are the famous Gutowski-Real black holes. All right. As Mike Duff would like to say, there is an embarrassment of richness, because all the three computations have different points of view, different technical aspects. And And there's, at the moment, some confusion as to how they are related. If they are not related, which one is the one that is really computing entropy and which one is computing something that looks like entropy but might not be entropy. But by now, I hope to have convinced you that I have a litmus test. So I have some number that I can bring, and if you don't match this number, then you're out.
So does it get the same answer?
So the leading order is the same for all these three methods. So the method is one method by Seok Kim and collaborators that they use essentially the physical partition function with a constraint. Then there's a localization computation by Cabo Bisset, Cavani, Martelli, Murti, and then Benigni and Milan have another computation using the superconformal index in the form of Bethe answers. All right, so the summary is that there are now three computations, all of them at the leading order give you the entropy function that matches the entropy of this ADS5 electrically charged rotating black holes. All right, so now here's my story. So I like the Bethe answers approach because the Bethe answers approach gave me something that was exact in N. That's one something that I use for my in the first part when I talk about numerical approaches. But also in some of these approaches, you need to take something that is called the Cardy limit or Cardy-like limit. And in the Bethe answers, you can compute without taking the limit. So you compute for an arbitrary value of the fugacities. So what I'm going to explain here briefly is that this computation for n equal 4 that Benigni and Milan did, I extended to an arbitrary for d n equal 1 with my student, Alfredo. And essentially now I can consider a quiver with nv times sun and n chi chiral fields that I've transformed it by fundamental representation of sun a cross sun b. The number is the same, but these are the places in the quiver. So these theories are particular in the sense that they come from toric diagrams, so they can also, and then they are a conformal invariance condition. It essentially tells you that they can be drawn on a torus. And the superconformal index for them can be written like this. And one way to evaluate the superconformal index, actually, so I should mention, I think Romulf Berger did this work when he was a postdoc here in the old perimeter. So Romulf Berger gave us a formula for the superconformal index here. This is the formula, and it has some numbers. This essentially is to count some degeneracy. You sort of recognize this as holonomies, right, that you need to integrate over. So what Benigni and Milan did using results of Closet, Kim, and Willett was to rewrite this superconformal index in the language of Bethe answers. So now I sum over Bethe answer solutions of some system, and then my partition function looks of this form. All right, so H is very similar to the determinant B that I treated in the ABGM case. All right, so it's some formula. Now, the interesting aspect is that there's some solutions that there's an interesting story of where these solutions came from. But you can certainly plug them in this queue and check that they're solution of the Bethe answers. Now, the story, I will spend a couple of minutes saying it because it's really a beautiful story. So here is essentially a theory. I'm computing a superconformal index. So my theory is on S1 cross S3. And I was able to rewrite it using this Bethe answers trick. But it turns out that the solution, even though I'm doing a superconformal index, come from solutions that were obtained by considering localization on T2 cross S2. So that's why there's a natural tau here. And now you might, this is an interesting question, why the solutions of T2 cross S2 are precisely solutions of also solutions of S1 cross S3. That I don't know, but this is a fact. You can just plug and check. But I think there might be an interesting story behind this. So you use these solutions, and this is enough for you to compute. Okay, you need to shift the chemical potentials appropriately to create the maximum cancellation. But the key thing is that you can compute. This is your entropy function, okay, completely generic, and you can compute it for. This is for an arbitrary n equal 1 for the theory, And this leading piece is the one that gives you the entropy, the leading entropy of the black hole, or when you know the black hole, right? ADS5 crosses 5, black holes are known. All right? So now what you can also do is to say, okay, what is the log contribution of this superconformal index? And this is what this slide is about. So there's some term, this came from the normalization, this kappa, if you don't remember, is related to this Pohlhammer to rank of G. This is the vial, the dimension of the vial group. So there's some intricate formula, but you can expand it. So you get log of n coming from here. There are other terms. This might be even more important, but at the moment I'm just focusing on the coefficient of the log of n. Hopefully I have convinced you why this is the right thing to do. So if you write your partition function, is this be the answer? So the contributions can come from the coefficient kappa, from this part z, again, it's, or from this part h, all right? So the kappa part is essentially here, and it gives me a log of n. The z part gives me also an n log n part with nv, number of nodes. But this Jacobian gives me negative nv n log n. So the total contribution cancel, this n log n term cancels, and I get just log n. And if I specialize that to n equal 4, which is the field theory dual of black holes in ADS5 crosses 5, I get this. So this is what the superconformal index tells me. Unfortunately, this is work in progress, but I have not been able to compute this on the gravity side. And you can guess why it's a lot harder, because now I'm in even dimensions, I'm in 10 dimensions, so I really need to compute like Riemann to the 5 with different contractions. So it's a long computation, which is on the way, but at least this is what we will know if the superconformal index is really giving me the microscopic description of the entropy beyond the leading order. All right, so with that I will conclude. So some of the things that we learned during this computation, not just that, of course, life is fair in terms of ADS-CFT, but so the fact that we use this non-streamal branch for computing, same as Sen and other people, it's a good sign in trying to understand slightly non-streamal properties of this theory. So one thing that I'm interested in developing is there was a very beautiful story by Maldacena, Strominger, and Whedon in the case of M5 brain. So they were able to compute also the subleading, but not the logarithmic. There was an n to the 1/2 in between n to the 3/2 and log of n term. That term can be understood in terms of higher curvature corrections. And from the gravity side, we have powerful techniques like Wald entropy formula. So there's enough machinery to try to tackle this term. And I think something interesting will come out of this. That's in progress. Now, regarding this electrically charged rotating ADS5 black hole, I mentioned that there are three different groups that have proposed their own observable. And I think that the logarithmic, so the police department for logarithmic dual gravity is on this case, and we will have an answer soon. But more interestingly, I think, and more generally, I think that this is now a very precise setup in ADS-CFT where you can compute properties of black holes, and hopefully, with some modification, we can go beyond counting into something slightly more dynamical, like maybe some formulation on the information loss or something like that. So with that, I finish. Thank you.
Thank you for a very nice talk. Any questions? Is there any hope of computing the gravity side, like the supersymmetric index, whatever partition function with ADS5 boundary conditions, like including higher derivative correction?
I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't know. So you mean like full string theory or just?
Many terms don't contribute. I assume that only F terms contribute. So many terms.
I see. Yeah, so higher curvature correction for ADS, I don't know. I don't know how difficult it would be. I was thinking about the M5 brain story, because there's this work of MSW that can give you some guidance, but it's probably possible. I just don't know how to handle all the terms. So.
Any other questions? So I was wondering, so this approach by Song Kim, I think you told me that he considered the trace without minus one to the f.
Yes.
I wonder how he could really calculate that, because then you don't have like something like supersymmetric index, which is protected. Right. So
the computation, so you start with the actual physical partition function without minus one to the f, but then you're working in a, I don't think I have it here anywhere, but you're working on a condition. So you impose a condition along these lines, and this condition is kind of equivalent to having minus one to the f inserted.
Okay.
In the partition function, once you take the limit. So I think that Seo Kim, even though the starting point doesn't say I'm actually doing the index, this condition that he imposes is equivalent to saying I'm actually going to compute the index. But that is not obvious. Now, one advantage of using a Seo Kim approach is that you are not starting immediately from a supersymmetric observable. So in that formula, you can now say, what happens if my black hole is slightly off extremality? So if I have a very small non-extremality parameter included, and that can still be handled. Again, you will also later on try to impose a condition like this, but now you will have a deformation of the original partition function. So that, I think, is very powerful, but it's not clear if what it is computing yet, but at least it's more deformable. All their approaches, they are a localization computation. I don't know how to deform that to include a non-extreme of black holes. But at least that computation of Seo Kim and collaborators allows you to think about how to deform it.
Thank you. More questions? So if not, let's thank him again.